fuck are we? We're getting weird ass mass ejections hitting our magnetic field. We're getting gamma ray bursts from Centaurus.
2 in 8 hours. And I think I posted a comment on one of Suspicious's videos about to me it feels like that we're getting a lot more gamma ray bursts recently.
Well, most of the radiation we get is gamma ray.
Yeah,
but like cosmic rays and all that are mostly gamma rays.
Yeah, I don't know if he just has been reporting on it more, or if I'm noticing it more, or what. But it seems like it's happening more, to me. But
well, we could be looking at a Carrington event or something different.
Yeah. Well, the Carrington event was just the penetration of the magnetosphere with the solar flare,
or it's coronal mass ejection.
Which actually
are like, they in the same vein?
They are, but the coronal mass ejections are bigger. They're like the filaments on the sun that break apart and can be bigger than X class flares and things like that on like a normal basis.
Whereas a flare is just when the magnetic field is such to let particles leave straight from the sun instead of building up like an elastic band and.
Yeah. Crazy electronic ribbons. There is a cat on YouTube, and his channel name is The United Knowledge. And he has, like, an hour-long video. Well, a few videos talking about, like, solar events that happen on a yearly basis. And the Carrington event is actually one of the yearly things. And I think that was February 21st.
Just not powerful enough to be like the one from the 19th century that got the name Carrington event.
It is, but the reason it got the name is because it actually hit the Earth.
Oh,
so
there
it was
you
kind
go.
Of the,
okay.
like a kill shot.
Yeah, the solar kill shot that we referenced in the last chronological cryptodome. But the end of the world one? One after that one.
I'm sure we talked about the end of the world one. But so this United Knowledge guy, he's like in high school or something, and it's all public knowledge what he has, and he just takes information that NASA put out for this day, like we'll say March 11th, which was the day of the tsunami in Japan. And he goes back, and he, like, from 2010 or 2009, and looks at the day and puts them side by side, and they're all doing the same thing each day. Did you know that so the earthquake that caused the tsunami in Japan knocked our rotation off some, like, 0.0035 millimeters or something weird like
that?
Yeah,
an extremely small,
but
quantum small.
Yeah, it also had it flipped the poles on the Earth. For I don't know if it was a few minutes or a few seconds, but it was enough to just jog them.
Really?
Which is kind of unsettling. Yeah, one of these days you should check out that channel. It's, like I said, most of his videos are pretty long, but there's some pretty good information there. There was one in February, which was the same thing as the Carrington event, and I think yesterday's Suspicious Observer report talked about the Carrington event a little bit, and he says it happens basically yearly.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was wondering, we've talked about fundamental forces, we did an episode about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically all have a ratio where if the strong nuclear force is 1, the weak nuclear force is whatever, the magnetic is 1/137 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Would it then make sense to say that there's a proportional or a proportionality between the causes for certain events and the ratios of their quantum constituents? So gravity, therefore, would cause some of the least amount of, shall we say, interesting things in the heavens.
Yes.
Or rather, magnetism would cause more than gravity.
Well, yeah. here's something else kind of interesting about the thing that we were just talking about. NASA says it's the sun on a yearly basis doing all this weird stuff, but there's some sort of outside force still.
Many outside forces, if I were to guess.
Yeah, but I think this one's a lot closer than the ones that we're normally told about. Maybe that solar anvil thing.
Like, do you think it's a natural phenomena or a device?
Oh, man, now that's where it gets pretty tricky. I could go either way. I'm pretty 50-50 on it. Like, I'd like to think that we're not that technologically savvy, but I know that we're definitely not what we think we are. We're way farther ahead, in my eye. But, you know, shadow governments and stuff won't tell us that.
So, if it were technological, you think it would be something that we've done? Man?
I think that's another 50-50 one, really.
Damn.
Yeah, like, well, there's like, you know, the sunspots and things that they're really active with the solar flares. When they turn towards Earth, they all pretty much die. And then as soon as they get past the crest of the sun, so they're not Earth-facing anymore, they go nuts again. And it's been happening for like a year.
So maybe we're shooting something at the sun to stymie them?
Well, some people think it could be HARP-related. I don't know.
I would like to believe that it's all part of a natural cycle that we're just now feeling the effects of because we've reached that technological point of advancement.
Yeah, I like to think that it's a natural cycle, but I think that, if anything, I think that we as humans are trying to stop it, and we're just fucking with shit we don't understand, and it's gonna come back to bite us in the ass.
Really, really fucking hard. Yeah, because we'll build up a whole bunch of energy stopping sunspots, and then that energy will just,
or, you know,
find another place to get it.
This, like, weird shield that we have that's keeping all the solar sunspots from shooting at us. That energy that's building up behind that little shield, I can't help but think that it might burst through and be really bad when it does.
Well, it has to go somewhere, but not necessarily to the Earth, right?
Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, shooting it off the backside where, you know, Jupiter is or something weird.
Maybe it's all hitting the moon and charging it
with the Tower of Babel.
Until eventually the moon itself will function as a third magnetic pole. We'll enter into a weird unipolar magnetic field.
Birds will fly straight up in the air.
They'll have no choice. Mm-hmm. And then they'll just all come crashing back to Earth because of you know, exhaustion and lack of oxygen. Except a few. The strongest of them will reach low orbit, survive, and mate, and make birds that can tolerate low orbit. And then
go farther and farther and farther.
Each generation. Yeah, eventually deep space seagulls.
Ugh, that'd be horrible.
I'm simply saying that life finds a way.
No!
That's right. Space pterodactyls eating you. So, our last episode, we were talking about space whales.
Yeah.
And I happened to, right after that, play the video game Faster Than Light for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have a spaceship and you go around and all that shit. But one of the things I got was you found a bunch of merchants holed up in the belly of a dead space whale. And I was like, I knew it!
They are real. Mechanics of space life. I wonder if they would always have a space-proof chamber inside them.
Or, like their gut?
Yeah, or They'd probably, if there was a spacefaring beast, it'd probably not have anything to do with air or any sort of respiratory system, wouldn't you think? It'd be more like a plant where it takes energy from
like
light.
Have big hydrogen collectors on it. Although, maybe it would have a blowhole that's like, it pulls up into orbit of your planet, and it just dips its blowhole into your atmosphere and sucks up the whole thing.
Whoa. And that's what happened to Mars.
Yeah, so it's like an eater of worlds. I'll worship the mighty space whale. He can... It is only through offering him great alms that he will pass by your planet. Something like Galactus, the World Eater.
Wasn't he a character in The Tick?
No, man, he's in Silver Surfer.
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck is the character in The Tick?
It's just this giant dude that floated around in space until he came to a planet, and then he started eating the planet. And The Tick was doing a job to...
Fuck? That is Galactus.
The Tick was doing a job to remove the CHA that his nemesis chair had carved into the moon with a giant laser. He managed to get off the C, which left an H and an A. But anyway, with the explosives he was using to get off, or to get the characters off and level out the moon surface again, exploded and sent him hurling through space until he landed on this giant dude.
Oh, whoa. And then he informed the giant dude that, that there were other forms of life.
Yeah, they became buddy-buddy, and eventually the dude took him took the Tick back to Earth, and the dude started to eat Earth, and the Tick had to stop him.
Spoon!
So today, on the 30th, there was a 3.9 earthquake off the coast of Washington.
That's pretty big for Washington.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like probably 300 miles out into the water, but still, you know,
it's subduction of the Pacific plate, right?
Mm-hmm. I noticed that there were a few earthquakes over in Montana, but it's pretty much the part of Montana that's as close to Spokane as you can get.
So the most western portion of
mm-hmm.
it.
Right. Yeah, right above Highway 90. Yeah, that's kind of crazy. I saw a video from earlier this year about them doing tests underneath Spokane to see if there was any seismic faults, like, that they didn't know about, which could have been why we had those earthquakes back in, like, 01.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah, it was like 3.0. Barely enough to feel, but, you know, still pretty uncommon for Spokane. I think the last one before that was like in 1920, and that was like a 6.0.
That's pretty big.
Yeah.
And not gonna happen anytime soon. Well, maybe 100 years. That's the time to look.
We don't know.
Though we ascribe certain meaning to the century mark that I'm sure nature doesn't give a shit about.
Yeah. It's just something in our little world. I'm sure back in like 1899 people were like, yes, 1900, this is gonna
we're gonna have flying carriages.
Jetpacks for our horses.
Oh, that's where they went wrong. The whole flying cars thing. They need to go back. Jetpacks for the horses. That would have solved it.
Yeah.
Would have solved it. Would have been like some BioShock shit. Whatever.
Could have actually had fun.
How do you get horses to operate a jetpack?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe
or
that's...
Or you just like... The horses just stand there and the carriage driver operates the jetpacks.
I think the carriage driver will probably operate the backpack.
So the horses are like, what the fuck? Why am I even here?
Aesthetics.
Flat.
Duh. Why am I here? Why do all horses talk like this?
Because of Mr. Ed. Is that true?
Probably. Shit. That's
where it started,
isn't it?
That's
the voice that we all associate with it.
I used to love Mr. Ed.
See?
That poor tortured horse that had to eat gallons of peanut butter a day.
Yeah, just so he'd move his lips a little bit.
No, he can talk. They'd probably show him to little kids and just load him up with peanut butter and then have somebody speak over the PA system.
Well, hello there. What's your name, little girl?
I'm sure all Great Danes laugh like... They eat sandwiches exclusively.
Huge, like, 3 foot tall sandwiches that they smush down to single sandwich size.
Yeah, what happened to all that bread? It'd be like that.
Well, that's
like
probably why
doughy, like, thick shit that you do as a kid and smash the bread all day.
Like this little ball.
Oh, that's what they should have done. Sandwich balls.
Yeah.
Like a calzone.
Yeah. A little bit of, like, peanut butter and jelly in this little blob that you bite into, and it's like an Oreo, but. Not.
And then a ghost jumps out and scares you. Food balls. I think Charlie on Always Sunny in Philadelphia eats those.
We need to do food squares because they're way more space efficient.
Oh, there you go. Or how about food tetrahedrons?
Is that with or without the package?
Either one.
Yeah.
Oh, they all interlock together. You can use them to build makeshift temporary housing.
Out of food that you can later consume.
Well, it's just made of amino acids and Chinese newspapers anyway.
You know, it's weird that like we have so many like rounded bottles and things, but our houses are square. But if they were rounded, wind and water and things would just go over them instead of crashing into them.
So we need to live in giant spheres?
Well,
or like domes?
At least half circle domes. Domes would be better. The half circles.
Domes with pylons in the middle?
Yes. Just in case our magnetic field fails and we need to generate our own
atmosphere.
There
you go. And they can have they can emit a signal that irritates the space whales so they don't suck up all your atmosphere.
Yeah, get the fuck back, space whale.
Although in the last episode we were talking about space whales, they were our friends.
What happened?
Yeah, oh.
Space whale, come back.
Just let us ride you and we won't have to eat you.
Yeah, we've already determined that one.
Damn space whales.
They're crafty. So if something happens to the magnetic field, I mean, like, with what I've been seeing, well, today, I was just scoping it out, I don't see anything past, like, a 5.0 for the past few days, which is pretty good, I guess. But
it's just storing up energy for the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Prepare for a 9.0 Japan.
March 11th.
Uh-oh. So March 11th is the day to look out for, huh?
As far as March, there's a few days. I think the one that the Carrington event fell on is supposed to be another one.
Do you know what day that is?
It's in February, and I want to say, like, the 21st or 12th. 12th. But I'm not sure. I can't remember. You'd think something like that I could remember. And that was, like, 150 years ago.
The solar storm of 1859. Let's see if it says what the exact date was.
August.
From August 28th to September 2nd, 1859, numerous sunspots and solar flares were observed on the sun. Just before noon on September 1st, the British astronomer Richard Carrington observed the largest flare.
I got my facts all screwed up.
Which caused a major coronal mass ejection to travel directly toward Earth, taking 17 hours.
That's the one that made telegraph machines work without being plugged in.
Right.
And, like, wires to get fried all over the place.
By inducing voltage across currentless wires.
Well, now that's weird. Didn't Nikola Tesla want to do something kind of like that, too?
Yeah.
And if we had been using that sort of technology, wouldn't we be well equipped to handle something like this?
I would put money on that, sure.
God, we're fucking stupid.
So, instead we could have... instead of frying every circuit on Earth, potentially, we could have had a bunch of weird antennas that would distribute the charge evenly enough not to blow up all the light bulbs and...
Or probably just harness it and use that instead of the Earth's for a little while.
Well, it is going into our system, whether we want it to or not.
So it probably would have... Yeah, well, I don't know. Then again, maybe if we had been using the Tesla technology, the magnetosphere could have collapsed faster. But...
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Maybe it did have some kind of strange pollution associated with it.
Well, you know, we don't know. All I know is that if I would have much rather had that kind of technology and be learning about that rather than have, like, coal and nuclear power plants. You know, like...
Yeah.
The Chernobyl, Long Island, Fukushima. I think it's a great idea. But
how about, like,
maybe we shouldn't rely on it so much.
Let's have a kind of power generation that doesn't revolve around boiling water. How about just that?
No, that's pretty sweet. Yeah.
I mean, coal, you burn it to boil water to turn a turbine. Nuclear, you put a bunch of nuclear metal into water until it gets hot enough to boil the water, which turns a turbine.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Hydroelectric, you let the water get pulled by gravity to turn a turbine.
Son of a bitch.
We just can't absorb the energy raw, except with, like, solar panels or something. Imagine if we did pursue that, though. We could have solar panels that you put inside the melted down reactor of Chernobyl that absorb radiation and generate usable current.
Yeah, if we had been...
Or something.
Yeah, I'm sure that we'd have a better understanding of it if we just...
We're limiting ourselves. You can't go to space with steam engine.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. You gotta be able to pull your power from everywhere around you.
Unless maybe it's a space whale steam engine.
Yeah.
Just be superheated. Hydro pockets. Because it eats things, and then at its core, there's a section that heats the water, which turns a turbine, which then powers the rest of the whale, but then it's cycled up so that heat, it's then cooled by space. There's a special Stirling engine, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Where you use the change in temperature to move a piston.
Moving turbines, that's all we really want to do.
Just generate mechanical energy, even if we use that mechanical energy to turn back into electrical energy to put into an iPod. So, we're talking about dangers of pole shift again.
Yeah, you know, like, the magnetic poles, I think, have a lot to do with the geographic poles. You know, I mean, they're obviously kind of connected.
It would maintain a physical alignment of the metals that are in the core and mantle of the Earth.
Mm-hmm. And right now,
if it changed, there would be every reason for them to change their momentum to favor being aligned to those fields.
So the pole 2 years ago was clocked at 40 miles per year. And, you know, that was 2 years ago. So it's at least 80 miles. And it traveled, like, 70 miles in the course of, like, I think it was, like, 50 years or something. Anyway, the poles are definitely speeding up.
So they move anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been fluctuating a lot lately.
It was, you know, it always had kind of this weird teetering, wandering type thing going on with it. And then now it's surprising how fast it's, like, just sort of shot towards one direction.
That tells us that something has changed to allow it to go that way. Because it'd be reacting to other magnetic fields.
Yeah.
Namely the sun.
Mm-hmm. Well, I saw somewhere that the north and south pole of the sun are basically flipping, like, they're pretty much there right now. And I guess Neil Tyson was saying it was supposed to be in, like, March or something like that.
I believe it. As I understand it, they do switch every once in a while. 11 years. Yeah. Part of the solar cycle is that they switch.
Yeah, every solar maximum they flip.
But the Earth would be able to maintain it as long as it's more powerful at our distance from the sun than that flipping mechanism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But we're really weak right now.
Yeah, and if we get a strong enough pulse, we're pretty much just forced to the other direction, or another direction. It doesn't have to be opposite.
I've seen a couple of videos where the field, like the north or the south, one of the poles actually, like, completely fails in the video, like, during a CME and whatnot. Like,
I've seen simulations where different pockets open up where you have north and south, sort of like the way the sunspots are structured,
mm-hmm.
but on the surface of the Earth.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of think of the magnetic pole. It's easier for me to think about it like this, but I put it like a, you know, liquid. So, and as it settles out, it's going to have multiple spots, kind of like oil and water. You know, if you shake it up, it's got a lot of little balls or bubbles.
Yeah, and those settle out into big regions.
Right. You know, think of that as the North and South Pole. Like, there's equal mass of both, but, like, they're in the process of switching, and during that it gets really chaotic.
That somewhat lends to my feeling that when it's at a solar minimum, you're just waiting for larger individual events to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas during a maximum, most of the events are relatively similar in scope.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
So, what's shaking up the sun, then?
That's a big question. I know the 21st is come and gone, but maybe an extra celestial body.
Yeah, but the Earth doesn't exert much magnetic change on the sun, so...
Well, then that would have to be a really powerful thing, like, you know, a binary star. I still think it's possible.
Maybe the relative noise of the the solar wind in a more dense area of the galaxy that we're supposedly entering.
That's a good point, yeah.
It would contribute more turbulence, I guess, although that's a vague description even when you're talking about air turbulence. Mm-hmm. Turbulence.
I wonder, in relative direction to the Earth, what direction the sun is traveling through the universe, or the galaxy.
Well, it should be orbiting the center of the galaxy in roughly a sinus curve. So it would either be going at, well, and the ecliptic of our solar system is 90 degrees to the ecliptic of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like Saturn.
So we, like, our north pole would be facing the center of the galaxy, or maybe our south pole. Or part of the time, one, the other part of the time, the other.
Mm, okay. Hmm.
That's which might be of interest, actually. Like, what happens when we go, when we cross the threshold where Earth's, right now, what's the northern hemisphere, is facing the interior of the galaxy, and it would flip to facing out into the void, right? But we should be able to see still a big band in the sky of the Milky Way or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Puny little Earth floating around.
Yeah, there's a billion planets to explore, right?
We're trapped on this little thing.
We can go. We can go, humanity. Let's just do it. So, if there's more stars affecting our solar system, I wonder if a coronal mass ejection or something short of a nova or supernova could affect us from a neighboring star system.
Well, probably. It just would. It's like dropping a little rock in a pond. The ripples keep going, but they get smaller. Well, they get right, bigger, but they get
by
smaller.
The time they reach us,
it's next to nil.
Yeah, there's almost no effect.
Mm-hmm. So the United Knowledge guy, he was saying that NASA blames the events on, like, solar flares and things like that. But time-wise, they don't really line up.
Which events?
Like
tsunamis and shit?
Yeah, the March 11th earthquake. So NASA put out like a solar flare warning, like I think a day or so before the earthquake hit. So, but he brought up a few other points about it being brought on from somewhere else other than the sun. Something else in the solar system or close to it is having an effect on us.
Well, if say a relatively minor event on the sun causes a 5 to 9 magnitude earthquake on the Earth, then something, say, half the mass of the sun would be, you know, like a 2 to 3, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Or maybe inverse square rule. So it, if it was half the mass, it would be a 1 to 2, because it'd be 4 times weaker.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is lots of quanta entering our solar system from other stars could pile up into a series of events. Like we're being vibrated just a little bit.
Mm, I mean, just like keep banging it. Or keep vibrating.
Yeah, like when you hit a bell and it sort of... At first it's kind of violent, but it just sort of settles out yeah. until it's just a little thing that barely even makes sound.
Mm-hmm.
And just be like... You know, doing that, dropping a rock in our ocean.
Yeah.
Only from 3 million light years away, or well, probably shorter than that, right?
Yeah.
Although, you know, the closest star to us is Proxima Centauri, and we never really look at it.
Yeah, shouldn't we be focused right there?
Like, wouldn't it be prudent to see what we could observe from that star and correlate it against earthquakes or, you know, anything that's happening in our solar system?
Yeah.
Or for that matter, any star that's within, let's say, 10 light years. Although that's not very many. I think there's 2, 3...
We gotta go a few parsecs.
Parsecs. Make the Kessel run in less than 12 parsecs. And people say, but parsecs a measure of distance, not time. Well, maybe the Millennium Falcon goes so fast that, I mean, at that speed, at anything faster than light, you're not talking about just raw speed. You're talking about the degree to which you warp space. So maybe the Millennium Falcon warps space to the degree that going from that Kessel run from point A to point B only measures 12 parsecs.
Mm.
That's relativity. And Han Solo's better at it than you are.
Yep.
Also, don't doubt the ability to rationalize anything in science fiction.
Yeah.
Like, what's dilithium? That's not an element.
Not yet.
I don't think there's any di anything on the periodic table. But, I mean, they have funky names for deuterium. That's just hydrogen that's heavy.
Because
of an extra neutron.
So, maybe dilithium is like helium 3?
I don't... Where are you getting the helium 3?
Oh, no, I was thinking about the moon, because they usually find it in planets and things like that.
Do they?
Oh, I thought so.
Well,
yeah.
There should be a lot of it. Like, something like 98% of the universe is hydrogen, and then 1% is helium, and 1% is the rest of everything else that we rely on, every drop of our blood, has iron in it. And it doesn't even speak to all the huge amount of carbon. But I think dilithium would be lithium, which actually can play a role in fusion. With then deuterium suspended in the crystal. So it's like a crystal of like lithium atoms with a deuterium atom every so often.
Oh. Neat. And
then you use the deuterium to make helium. You fuse two heliums to make beryllium or something like that, and then that decays into lithium, and then you can use that to, I don't know, it's like the proton process or chain or something. But I'm sure Gene Roddenberry didn't know shit about that when he came up with it. Hell, in the first couple episodes it was just called lithium. So I guess their ship was running on good vibes. He was a humanist, after all. What do you say we wrap this one up?
Alright.
So, we need a song. That's a good one. And that's a good reminder to keep locking up.
Some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine, plowman dig my earth. None will level on the mine, nobody I was scared.